All right, everybody, it's Tuesday, and today is Let's Grill Genie. I'm glad everybody's could be on the call today. Since we changed the time, we wanted to give everybody enough opportunity to be on the call today. That's why we made it a little bit later. So today you can ask Genie any question that you have, anything in regards to raising money, analyzing deals, you name it, Genie knows all about it. So Genie, are you on the phone?
I am.
All right. So.
Okay. So we're going to begin. First, I'm going to tell you a few things, but we want to pray for anyone that's been affected by Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, and coming up, Hurricane Jose. So any of our students that were affected or had any damage, our prayers are with you and hope you're safe and sound and things can be replaced. People cannot. So what's happening in the Ari mental world? Jeff is headed out to Columbus, Ohio for his immersion this weekend. Then he's going to follow that up with Seattle and after that, Kansas City. I'll be headed over to the Managing the Manager right here in Rockland, the DoubleTree. Perfect Your Presentation is coming up on October 4th and 5th in Plymouth, Mass., right where I live, right where the Pilgrims landed. Elevate is in Plymouth as well on October 6th and 7th. And the Private Money Boot Camp is coming up October 20th through the 22nd in Long Beach. Let's do a high five out there. So Addie Kamali and Eric Stewart, they're closing on a 96 unit in St. Louis. They're looking at a $30,000 acquisition fee, and that should close sometime today or tomorrow. So we're excited for them and happy that they got this all done. They worked really hard on it. So do we have an operator on hand?
Yes, we do. Hi, Jeannie. This is Lillian. I'll be the operator for today.
How are you? So we're going to open up the lines, and if you can just tell them how to ask for a question, then we'll get rocking and rolling.
Sure, not a problem, ladies and gentlemen. If you have any questions, please press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start it off with one question that came
Genie,
in.
Genie, before you start it out, right, it's like,
yep.
We want to welcome all the new students that came in from Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What we'd like you to do is to get on the call and, say a few things. But if you don't know who Genie is the one that raises all the money for all of Dave's deals. She knows everyone. She knows, she knows deals. She knows how to raise money. She knows how to fund deals. She's just a huge, huge wealth of knowledge. And if you're just sitting on the line just listening, you need to talk to her. You need to ask her anything. Any question is a good question. We know all about what goes on with the private money, the sponsorship, the immersion training. Everything that you know, managing the manager, if you have any questions about property management, any type of questions, Genie is a huge resource. We have Jermaine here. Jermaine knows everything, too. And you have myself. I know a few things, but so press star zero right now. Let's make this an active call with questions, because otherwise Genie's just going to sit there and, read emailed questions that came in.
Yep, that's right. So Jeff gets bored when I read questions. So operator, did anybody press zero yet?
Yes, we actually have a few questions. First question comes from Trinita. Trinita, please go ahead.
Hi, Trinita.
Hey, Genie.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Listen, first of all, I would like to say my prayers go out to all the hurricanes affected by the hurricane, and also bringing up my topic is about flood insurance when it comes to commercial property. How does that work?
Well, most of the properties in these zones that are hampered with hurricanes have flood insurance. And if you don't and you're buying a property, you may want to talk to Michael Shadid over at Franklin Insurance and ask him, you know, the kinds of properties that you're buying, if you should have flood insurance, if there's been any history at all. Of course, some of the areas that have been affected in this last couple of weeks have never been affected before, so some of them were left bare. Any living in an oceanside community like Miami and all of that, most of those properties have flood insurance because they're preparing for it. Houston has flood insurance because they were affected by Katrina, but it went way far into other areas, and they may not have flood insurance. So it's something to be cognizant of and be prepared for.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Good seeing you at the UP9.
You too, Jeff.
Okay, up next we have Roger. Roger.
What else? Okay, hold on a second. Jeannie, what else do you do for the company?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Oh, I do. I wear many hats here. I am Dave's assistant. I raise the money for Dave. I analyze student deals. I enter and process credit cards. I can't even think of the things I do. I go to a lot of
events. All right, we'll take the next question. Next time, be prepared.
Okay.
Roger, please go ahead.
Hey, it's Roger from sunny Southwest and Hurricane Refuge, Florida. But the house has got sort of water. It's got water right up the door thresholds. And, you know, depending on when power gets installed, mold may be a problem. But our first priority, obviously, is friends, family, and to help tenants that need help. But secondly, I just wonder any thoughts about, opportunities to do things. Short story, 2004, Hurricane Charley, very narrow, very violent, went through Punta Gorda. Unexpected, so killed 29 people. But it's really tough for the people that were killed, of course. But the whole area went through a resurgence. Four or five new hotels came in and built. It put Punta Gorda on the map. The mobile home that was down parked, that was downtown, the town said, no, we want decently houses there now. And it really turned that community around. And I'm just wondering if anybody's got any bright ideas of what happens next. You know, do we try and buy mobile home parks and rehabilitate them? Do we look for people who don't want to be snowbirds anymore? I just, I don't have any answers. My question is, any thoughts on what the impact for real estate investors due to this wide, wide flooding in Florida?
I think that's the big question of the day. Most people are asking the same thing, but there's nothing more secure than real estate. I mean, as long as you have insurance, you can rebuild. So you have your life and your family, and they're all safe and sound. You can just rebuild a property. It's just a building. So where do you go? I say do what you've been doing. You've been successful at it and just keep going.
Yeah,
not
okay.
Science.
Yeah, well, no, I'm just wondering if there are any, changing directions. At the moment we're doing no looking at all, of course, but opportunities. I mean, should we, are there people going to be depressed and, like after recession when everything has crashed and it's buyer's market phase one? Are we going to see some of that opportunity? I don't know. Just sort of throwing it out there, see if anybody's got any bright ideas.
I don't know. I'm not a political activist, but I say Trump is pumping a lot of money into the state of Florida. I would be grateful for him to help rebuild and refix, and I think that he's the right guy for the job.
Yeah, we do too, but thanks for your thoughts. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
sure thing, Roger.
Okay, up next we have Todd. Todd, Todd, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Todd in Columbus, Ohio. I'm kind of new to this. I'm going to be at the event this weekend, but I had a question regarding the fundraising. Do you ever raise the funds with investors prior to having a specific property in mind, or do you always have a property before you get those funds raised?
Well, that's an interesting question because we actually did raise the money for a fund, and I was halfway through raising the money, and lo and behold, we found four properties to put the money into. So it was sort of, you know, we set it up that one share was $10,000. You had to buy a minimum of 10 shares to be part of the fund, and it had its own name and EIN number, et cetera. But when I got to the $5 million mark, we found these four properties and plunked it into there, and we had to raise another $5 million for it to get done and closed. And it was an easy raise after the first $5 million. Because raising money for a fund, most people want to see, touch, and feel that property. They don't want to just give you the money and pray that you're going to be successful with the investment. They want to know that it's there and what they're buying into. So they get emotionally attached to a certain property. But no, yes, okay. we have raised money for a fund. But, I mean, what I would do is go to the Wilson conferences and meet 250 to 300 accredited investors, and you might meet one that has $50 million that's interested in buying real estate, and you have that money sitting there. Now you go out and shop and find the right deal to put the money into.
Okay.
Okay, up next we have Nelson. Nelson, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie. Hey,
hey,
Jeff.
Buddy.
Nelson.
How's your hometown in Hollywood?
Oh, I tell you, we we took a nice little beating, but I'm up and running. Parts by the beach, they're not doing too well. They took much more of a beating. Actually, they're still without power.
Yeah.
So they're still without power. But
yeah,
Hollywood,
I heard 5.5 million people were without power there.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good chunk. Key West is taking a huge beating. From the Keys, Key Largo, Key West, Marathon, they've all taken a very big beating.
Yeah.
So
what's your question for today?
Well, young lady, my question is, because I have a couple of rental properties here, and I was thinking about this. This is more on a property management side, which I know you're very strong on. And actually, it's a kind of a second and third part. Can we make it mandatory, or your thoughts on making it mandatory, if possible, for tenants to get renter's insurance?
I would institute that. I mean, you might have some pushback, but you're better off calling the Apartment Owners Association and see if it's allowed.
Okay.
And if it is, I would make it mandatory.
Okay. All right. That's great. To find that out, because I will implement that ASAP. And then the other two things is there was and I got on 2 minutes late to the call. There was a lady, she called in about the flood insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard you mention about Michael Shadid.
Yes.
And just to let you know, he's a fantastic guy, and in places where you might have potential, there's actually a map. I remember he shared with me a map. It's a website or something, but he said, look, in these areas for the flood zones, and they go back like 100 years or so, and so that was a really good piece of, he's a great
He's a good resource person. Yeah. In fact, he's with Franklin Insurance. They work all over the country, and his office line is 404-832-1254 if anybody wanted to call him. So that's Michael Shadid, Franklin Insurance, 404-832-1254.
Yeah, so he was a fantastic resource. And then the last thing is, I'm here in South Florida, and I'm doing a lot of things in North Florida. So I just throw it out there for anyone that has an interest, because I'm up there I have a rotation schedule where I'm up there. So Jacksonville, Gainesville, Tallahassee, Pensacola area. So I will be there next week to see what is happening, what's going on. So I
know we have a property in Pensacola.
Okay. Do you want me to drive it?
It's called Heritage.
The Heritage?
Yes, you're out in that area. It's called the Heritage.
Okay. I will do that, and I'll shoot you back some pictures.
Yeah. It's 223 units.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that when you guys were looking at picking up the property. So there. So that is about it. Jeannie, thank you very much.
Okay, Nelson, always good to hear your voice.
And same here. All right, take care.
You too.
Bye.
Okay, up next we have Griffith. Griffith, please go ahead.
How you doing, Jeannie? This is Griffin. I'm calling from D.C. I work for a group by the name of Viking Capital, and we kind of specialize in investing in emerging markets. I kind of just was curious if you might have a little bit of experience in emerging markets, and if so, kind of, you know, obviously there's, you know, the indicators like the demographics and population increases employers moving in the area. But do you have any other insights as far as, you know, it seems like a lot of these emerging markets, they've kind of already emerged a lot of the times, and you kind of are overpaying for on a unit basis. Do you have any, like, insights as far as, you know, catching it before everybody else figures it out, or any insight there?
Well, I know that there's a couple of companies that do extensive demographics. Dave does, he himself has studied economics for years, so he does his own emerging markets. But you could call the local chamber of commerce in a particular area or the Economic Development Committee and find out what new job growth is planning to come in. What are they doing to revitalize downtown areas? And then you can get in before the masses get that. I believe Nielsen is a good company to study demographics, as well as I always go to Marcus & Millichap. They're probably a competitor of yours. But if they have a property in a market you're interested in, the demographic information is amazing. As well as C.B. Richard Ellis does a great job with their demographics. So that's what I always go to.
Very good. Do you have any other things that you really like to see other than demographics, like major development or anything like that?
Well, I'm going to ask Jeff to finish answering this because he really delves into that being the engineer mindset that he is.
Okay, very good. What's Jeff's last name?
Lindahl.
Lindahl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Dave's brother.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So you're looking for in the market is you need an airport, rail lines are good, highways, because you want the jobs to be able to go in and go out. What we look for is if there's any like expansions. Like the SEPTA. SEPTA is like all the trains that go between cities and things like that. So if you go up on their website, you can try to find out where the you'll be able to see where they're expanding. So find out where they're expanding, and you want to be able to so you know what neighborhood to be into. So you go up there, find out where the future expansion is going to be. But the key is like job growth. You're looking for like 2% job growth year after year. So you can go up to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and you can like go up there and pull down cities and look to see who's had that job growth for the last couple of years. The Milken report, look at the change, like look at the best performing cities and see what the change was from 2015 to 2016. And if you see anything that's like 40 or more, that's an indication that something's going on in that market, and it could be moving. U-Haul will know where people are moving to. But what we used to do is we used to just go into the bookstore every month and just look at the headlines for magazines, the best performing city, where to move your job, where the millennials are going, different headlines like that. But you could set up a keyword search with Google Alerts for like so anything that hit Google about job growth would come into your email every day.
I told you he was an engineer.
Yeah, sounds good. Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
If anybody, we actually have an emerging market characteristic list, so if you want it, just email me, and then I'll email you the list. It's jevans@rementor.com. That's jevans@rementor.com, and I'll just show you the 13 characteristics that we look for in an emerging market. So if you want it, just email it to me.
What's your email?
jevans@rementor.com.
Oh, are you the guy that sent up a notification
so
about the call?
Every week.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question, even though Jeff likes them live, but I am really interested in joining your Elevate, but I was wondering, is it something a new investor like me should get involved with now or wait until I have some deals under my belt? And this is from Alec Warren in Anaheim. Alec, absolutely. If you can do it, this is not about deals. It is about personal development. Be the person you know how to be, young or old, experienced or inexperienced. We all need self-improvement. I love the whole concept of it. It's you meet in Boston for the first time, then you meet in Dallas, Texas for 2 days, and then you meet again in Boston throughout the year. And you're going to have so much assistance from Dave and his team that, and it's not us here, our team, it's the team that he works with, his medical doctor who's out in Texas, his Harvard Forum, a lot of those people. So it is a great thing. And myself, I'd like to be at it. So that's my answer to you, Alec.
Does he say
any
make
questions?
It the best year ever? Is that what he says? Like, make it the best year ever?
Yep, he does. I didn't want to use his words in case people... It's like learn how to harness the millionaire mindset. So if you want to change your life and improve it and touch upon things that you hadn't even known that you're capable of, this is the event for you. Any questions, operator?
Yes, we actually have Jose. Jose, please go ahead.
Jeannie and Jeff, how are you guys doing? Jose from the Bay Area.
We're good. Sorry, I didn't call you
back
yet, Jose. I've been crazy all day.
You're in trouble, Jeannie. You're in big trouble.
No, I'm not in trouble. I didn't even get your message till 2:30.
I'm just kidding with you. I actually I was just hearing the call, and it just occurred to me something. This is a different subject, but it's actually similar. But I wanted to... Just kind of running I've been buying properties and using a lot of debt partners, and that's been working fine, you know, just having the debt on the deals. But now that I'm putting all the pieces together and I'm finding more deals, if I find a property, right, and we all are being taught to kind of go based on the Trinity, such and such cap, equity amount, if there's a deal that is producing, let's just say 6.5%, as long as I have an investor that's willing to take that amount and we forecast an amount that we're going to generate per year growing, that's still a deal as long as you have the right investor, the right depth, and the right market, right?
Right. First of all, let me commend you on your use of the debt partners. To me, that's a hard sell because most of the people I deal with are much more educated than to go into a property and not get equity on the back end. So congratulations if you found a formula and made it work, because I think that's great. That means that your investor would come in, get 10% yearly, have no touch upon the property at all. You just pay them out every year, and then when you're ready to cash them out, you just cash them out.
Well, it's been working fine, but now that I'm cashing them out and selling it or refinancing it, they're, you know, more of their friends and, you know, the whole group keeps coming, and now some are want equity on the deals. Now,
yeah.
I'm getting a little bit overwhelmed with the calls, and obviously I don't want to just grab the money and put it in a deal that's not going to make sense. But
no.
But going back to the same question, if I could sell the deal that they'll get 7%, you know, keep in mind I'm in California and there's some deals I'm looking at in California. If I could sell it and they get 7% and some equity portion at certain point of the exit, that still works out, right, as long as it makes number of sense for the investor and myself, right?
Yeah, as long as the investor's happy, that's all you care about.
Okay.
Our investors are so much more sophisticated than yours. They know what's capable, and they're looking for an annualized rate of return in the 20 to 23 mark. And if you're doing 7% and they're happy with that, good for you.
When you're saying the annual return on that, obviously you're doing it as when you exit the equity plus the annual return, correct?
Right, right. So if they're paying,
yeah.
If you're paying, you know, 8% the first year, 9 or 10% the second, and 12 the third, you add those three together plus whatever their portion of ownership is, then you divide it by the number of years you held it, and you get an annualized rate of return.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I'm referring to, meaning that was a starting interest, but they actually do want double digits and the equity. And that's kind of where I'm heading to, which I guess I'm carving it out, I guess. All right, Jeannie, well, that was my confirmation. I'll circle back with you tomorrow. I got some other stuff I want to share with you, and I just kind of need your input. I don't want to take the call on this other question.
Okay, Jose. I'll be here all day.
All right. Okay. Talk to you later.
Take
Bye.
Care.
Okay, up next we have Doug. Doug, please go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, good afternoon, everyone. This is Doug Wyant from the Seattle, Washington area. I'm new to the group. Hi, Jeannie. And Jeff, looking forward to meeting you at the Immersion Tour coming up. I wanted to, if I could, I don't have a question. I wanted to help out here. And Jeff and Jeannie, I hope this is okay, but at the boot camp, this is regarding the gentleman who asked about emerging markets earlier. If it's okay, I picked up Dave's book. Jeff's brother, Dave Lindahl, obviously, has written a book called Emerging Real Estate Markets. If you're interested in the topic, pick it up and read it. You'll find everything you need to know about the market cycles. It's phenomenal. I personally will do nothing but emerging markets, and I have found it to be a wealth of information. It reads like part textbook and part personal self-development. So hopefully that's
Jeff,
okay. I made that
you've
plug.
Done that one? When you're all
I'm
done
sorry,
that
Jeannie?
One, when you're done that one,
yeah.
Pick up the multifamily millions because now
I
you're
have
ready
it's,
to go
I,
out and buy properties.
It's in the queue, Jeannie. It's the next one, actually. Yep.
There you go.
So right on. Hope that's helpful.
That's helpful. I just have one question, right? I can't find your confirmation for the Seattle immersion, so if you could like shoot that over to me, because I'm not sure if you bring in a guest to it or not.
I am not bringing a guest, but I will resend it over to you, Jeff. Thank you very much. I'll send it this afternoon.
All right. Great.
Okay, cool. Looking forward to it.
I'll see you next Friday.
Bye. Looking forward to it, man.
Yeah.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, so I got another one. What do you usually include in a property packet for investors? Evaluation, pro forma, underwriting, exit strategy, project, etc. Do I need a signed non-compete before showing it to an investor so they don't take the deal from me? So this came from Mark Magnuson in Florida. Mark, if you have the deal on a signed LOI and have begun your due diligence, no one can take the deal from you. You already have money down on the deal. So it's off the market and it's yours as long as you stay within the guidelines that the letter of intent you produced is given you. And as far as what do you give an investor, we give them a property package, an operating agreement, a subscription agreement, a PPM, questionnaire, EIN, and articles of organization. All of those things you won't have except for a property package while you're doing your due diligence, but during the same time, your SEC attorney is producing those other documents. Anything else, operator?
No, we have no further questions at the moment. And just as a friendly reminder, if you have a question, press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay. Is now a good time to buy multifamily? I am just wondering if you see interest rates climbing in the near future. And this is from Steven Nelson from Columbus, Ohio. I'm sure that interest rates will rise, but with all the tragedy things that have been happening lately and the government helping out, I think we are staying put for a while. I've been looking at a lot of deals, and they're all coming in the 4.5 to 4.8 range. But Eric Stewart, who's a lender, he probably is much more knowledgeable about these things than I am. And if you want to give him a call, he's the lender that comes to the boot camp. His number is 321-615-8919. He can answer any question that you might have about interest rates.
Okay, there's a great call, right? Oh, there's my phone. I don't know why it keeps falling over. Eric did a great call. It's about he does a quarterly call. He just had one recently. But there's a call about 3 months ago on the website. And he tells you what to do. He gets into doing a 10-year term because typically it's a 5 or 7 year, right? He says do a 10, things that you can do to prepare if there is a type of correction going on. So he listened to that call and then call him up with a couple of questions about what he covered, and that'd be even better. And if you can't find the call, just email Jermaine, right, Jermaine?
Actually, the call is March 28th, 2017, so I'm looking at it right now. Find it, it's on the March 28th, 2017 on the website. So just go to March, and you'll see the call.
And all you have to do, right, is there's a search bar at the top. And what do they type in on that search bar, Jermaine?
They can type in Eric Stewart and Mastery Teach Call with Eric Stewart, and it'll give you all Eric Stewart's calls.
Yeah,
and he did one a couple of weeks ago, but the one that Jeff was referring to was the one he did March 28th, 2017.
Nice.
Okay, my next question comes from Karen Augustin. I have a question. I am looking at properties in Ohio. In underwriting some of the properties, one of the big expenses is taxes. We called the tax assessors to help us calculate. The broker told us to consider drop and swap exchange. Is there any information or suggestions you can provide regarding drop and swap exchanges? I believe he's talking about a 1031 exchange. I never heard of a drop and swap. But I would call the tax assessor's office and get the mill rate for that particular property and calculate it correctly. I don't know why the broker would suggest a 1031 exchange that you don't have a property yet. So that's kind of interesting. Jeff, have you ever heard of drop and swap?
Oh, drop and swap, that sounds like it is a 1031 exchange.
Yeah, you're going to drop one property and swap it for another?
To do, yeah. Right? But what I would do is like... Oh, yeah, so you definitely need to find out how taxes are assessed in the area. Well, you have to find out how they go up, right? There's two different types, right? There'll be a scheduled, right, which could be 5 years away, 7 years away. If it's 5 years, you have to figure out what year you're in. If you're in, like, year four or five where you're going to get that assessment, like when you take over the property, then you need to underwrite for that value. That's why Gene was saying you need to know how they're calculated in the market. If otherwise, it gets reassessed at takeover or during when you buy it, and then you need to know exactly what the mill rate is because that's what you're going to be paying on day one. For the 1031 exchange, we have William Exeter, and just Google him in the mastery call, in the mastery website. He did a couple of really good calls on 1031 exchanges, but he's based out of San Diego, but he does nationwide. And you can contact him at Exeter, which is EXETER, 1031 Exchanges Services, LLC. He's a wealth of knowledge, and you just call over there and you can answer any questions. But that's what I think the swap and drop is that they're referring to.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like, too. Yeah. Any questions, operator?
No, Jeannie, no further questions at the moment.
Okay.
Do you have any questions, operator? You're getting very educated by these calls. Are you investing right now? Because remember,
no,
Alex,
I
our sound guy,
I
sound guy was like when we the first few boot camps that we had, that we had a sound person. And he was taking notes and stuff, right? And he ended up buying like a six family, and he just like he went from being a sound guy, chemical engineer, to like going down to Florida. He's running like a huge real estate like brokerage company down there, but he just kept investing, and he's a great
mm-hmm.
person.
Yep.
He took Alex. Notes, so I figured the operator was taking notes too.
All right, this call is from Ron Charity. I cannot be on the call because I am with patients until 5:30 each day. And he goes on to say that he is looking for the quickest, most effective way to raise private money. His time is limited, and he just can't ignore his obligations. So I'm going to give you a suggestion, Ron. Start interviewing a partner to work with you because you have no time to do this business. So doing things you like to do is going to be easier than doing everything. So find a partner that likes to do the things you don't like to do. And then you can work together, raising money, finding deals, working with brokers. I mean, all these things do take time, but once you set up a business strategy, it's going to be rinse and repeat and do it over and over again. And after you've done it two or three times, it becomes second nature. But you got to devote some kind of time, at least an hour or two every day until you get a business set up. And then you work with your partner and they fill in where you can't.
What did he say he did for work? Did he say
he's a doctor? He's a doctor.
He's a doctor? Well, what he has to do is find out what do doctors do for fun. You know, they probably do a lot of different things. And what he should do is, since he only has limited time and he wants to do what he does for fun, say like maybe he's into like cars. You know, so he goes to a meetup group that has people that own cars. So he goes in there, he's talking about something that he's knowledgeable about. And then he just mentions, like, hey, by the way, you know, I'm doing real estate. So now he's the only one in that meetup group that's talking about real estate, and bingo, there you go. That's how you raise money, doing something like you like to do for fun, to unwind and then maybe pick up some private money investors while you're doing it.
Or you go to the Wilson conferences and you meet people there. You got to put in a little bit of time. But once you go to the Wilson conferences and go to a real estate meetup group there, and you'll meet a ton of investors that all they want to do is invest in real estate. So you find the right deal that meets the Holy Trinity, and everybody knows what that is. It's cash on cash return of 12, a debt coverage ratio of 1.6, and a cap rate of 8 or higher. No matter what area, if you find the right deal, you're going to find the money, because people don't want to pass up a good deal.
Did you ask your dentist today, yesterday, if he had any money, Jeannie, when you were sitting in there getting that tooth yanked?
Actually, the dentist was a woman, and she didn't speak very good English, so I didn't ask her anything.
Well, all right. You missed an opportunity.
Yes, that's true. any other questions, operator?
Yes, we actually have Dan with a question. Dan, please go ahead.
Jeannie, this is Dan from Kansas City.
Hi, Dan.
Just joining. And I had a question on expenses.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into the second year and are unable to fund your cap expenditures for whatever reason, do you go back to the original investors? And if so, how do they take that? Or do you look for an additional investor or two to cover the lack of cash flow?
Okay. So if you have CapEx expenses when you first buy a deal, your bank is going to tell you how much money you've got to carry with that CapEx. So they might tell you $300 a door. They might say $400 a door they want you to carry. And they're going to give you a list of things they want you to complete prior to your, well, they're going to give you the loan, but they're going to hold back your CapEx money. So you've got to raise money from the investors to take care of these capital expenses right from the beginning. So it's part of your property package. So if they're telling you to carry $400 a door and it's a 100-unit property, you want to raise that money from the investors. And say you want to change and make the property more attractive, like putting in laminate flooring or granite countertops, you want to get a price quote and add that money into other closing costs so that the money is sitting there for when you have to do the work. The last thing you want to do at all circumstances is do a capital call to your existing investors. And truthfully, if it's a syndication, you cannot go out of that group to raise money from somebody else. Because if you do a promissory note with somebody, for say 50 grand, you can't pay your investors any dividends until you pay back that promissory note. So
okay.
The most important thing to do is to get a list of capital expenses that need to be taken care of to satisfy what the bank wants, also what you think will add more money to the property. So if all your neighboring properties have washer-dryer hookups and they have laminate flooring and granite countertops and you don't, you may want to start, as people move out, putting that in. So you want to have a bunch of money set aside. Your investors put up the money as part of the raise, and they get paid interest on that money. So rather than go and take, you know, a bridge loan or a second or anything like that, you want to make sure that the money is sitting there for when you need it.
Okay.
So when
that's
you analyze the deal, right,
for.
When you analyze the deal, you're going to be underwriting for as part of your raise, right, you'll underwrite, so you have the CapEx for the first year. Because then after the first year, it gets funded by the rent that's coming in from the tenants. So you'll be able to handle what the bank wants done in year 2, 3, and 4. The bank will figure out what the CapEx requirements for the property is going to be based on the inspection. When the inspector comes back, that's how they're going to figure out their CapEx. So when you and you're going to have your own inspection done too. You pay for both. But so you'll have a good idea what's going on with the property. If you ask for a CapEx report from the broker when you're analyzing the deal for the last 5 years, then you'll be able to look at that CapEx report and see what they replaced, you know, how many roofs were replaced in the last, 5 years. So you'll get an idea what needs to be done in the future, too.
When the bank does do their first initial analysis on the property and they come out and they tell you X amount of dollars needs to be set aside for CapEx, they're also going to list a bunch of things they want you to do within the first year. So they may withhold a certain amount of money to get these things done. You have to submit receipts on a quarterly basis. Then they send somebody out to inspect that you've done those repairs. They sign off on it, and then they cut you a check back for those repairs that you've spent money on. But if you don't have other closing costs in there, then where are you going to get the money to do the repairs? That's what I'm saying. Raise that money right from the beginning. If you know things need to be done, raise the money, have it sitting in the account so that you can get the work done.
Well, if you do an inspection, the bank does one, then I do one, and the inspection I have is substantially lower than what the bank wants done, is that something that you can negotiate?
If the bank's telling you they want you to repair windows or air conditioning units or, you know, put a new roof or some new fascia board or new gutters, whatever they tell you they want you to do as part of your deal with getting their mortgage,
mm-hmm.
They're not telling you to use a specific laborer to do this work.
But what I think he's asking is a negotiable. Yeah, it is. You can talk to the lender and say, hey, this is what my guys found and stuff at the property. Do we really need this done? I think the lifespan of the roof will be able to last another 3 or 4 years. That part is it's a little bit negotiable, but they get the call. They get the final say on what goes on with that CapEx.
Okay.
So you can present a good case to them.
Okay.
But raise enough money to get some work done. Don't put any money in your closing costs other, and you may pay for it in the long run, because then you're going to be doing a capital call and your investors are going to lose faith in you that you didn't think about these things ahead of time.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yep.
Great.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, what is the typical percentage that a management company should be getting for a 16-unit property? I am seeing 6% on the T12, but I thought Steve mentioned at the boot camp that a property under 50 units is in the 8 to 10% range for management fee. On my template, should I change it for the management company? This is from Frank Sutter. 16 units should be about 8 to 10%. I would go with the 10% until you get actual numbers. The smaller the property, the more the percentage, because you're not going to have any payroll on the property. So you want to make sure that the management company gets enough money to take care of you. You may have somebody come in and manage the property on a part-time basis, 20 units or less, which you'll be paying them an hourly rate, but you're going to pay a management company to put that person there. Hope that helps.
Yeah, I can add to that, too. It's that 6% that you're seeing, you need to find out what other charges they have. it could be like 6%, right? But then they have additional charges for like leasing for maintenance. So you really what you should do is like call up different property management companies in that market and tell them for a 16 unit, you have to tell them what the age is of it, what you should carry, and they will probably end up in the 8-10% range, like Jeannie said.
And a different note, not regarding a 16 unit, but say it's 150 unit, don't ever let your management company put a resident manager living on your property. You don't want that. You don't want to be giving away a free apartment to your managers. You want to make sure that they come to work, they do their day's work, and they go home. And your maintenance people, too. You can put them on call and pay them overtime, but don't have them living on the property because they get chummy with the residents, and then they're, you know, allowing things to slide. You know, maybe they're putting their work orders ahead of somebody else's that's been waiting, or maybe the manager is talking about other tenants to you. It's just not a good thing to do that. Any other questions, operator?
No, Jeannie, no questions at the moment.
Okay. Seems like
all right, we'll take two more because we have a hard close. We have a hard stop rate. So we'll take two more questions. The first two that come in, we'll take them. Otherwise, we're going to call it a day.
Okay. So I have questions from Matthew Mitchell. And I'm having a hard time finding multifamily housing starting at 5 units to 100 units. Can you tell me the easiest way to find them? Number one, broker relations. Go up to LoopNet, pick the area that you want to invest in, write down all the brokers' names, call them, find commonality with them, and ask them to put you on their preferred list of pocket listings. You can also find motivated sellers by doing a mailing. I think I know, but I have to ask, what is a good deal? How will I know for sure? A good deal is if it meets the Holy Trinity. If your cash-on-cash return is 12, your debt coverage ratio is 1.6, and your cap rate is 8 or higher, it's a good deal. And they're always based on actual numbers, not pro forma numbers. How should I get my funding? Would I get a private lender to fund my first deal? How should I assure him that his investment is safe for the long-term investment? Well, that's a loaded question. If you're running the property the proper way and putting all of the systems in place, the property is going to run properly. You have to manage your manager to make sure that you get the reports, the Monday morning reports, all of the financial information so that you can protect these investors and make sure they're getting the first 8% preferred rate of return before you get a nickel. And once you build that trust, you've got to keep that trust by communicating. That is key. Well, any other questions, operator?
No, Jeannie, no questions.
Boy. Okay, any questions on your end, Jeff? Jermaine?
No questions, Jeannie.
No,
okay.
I don't have any questions.
If I don't put money in a deal, will my name still be on the deed to the property? This is from Kimberly Butler. So if you have no blips on your credit report and have a sponsor with funds, you are still a managing member. The bank is going to do the call on that. If you have any hiccups at all in your credit, they may not allow you to sign the paperwork, but you're still a managing member in the deal, even though you haven't signed any documents. You found the deal, you got a sponsor, you you got them to show their credit, and you're still a managing member of the property.
Jeannie, we have one live question.
Good.
Okay, go ahead, David. David, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie and Jeff, this is David out of D.C. How you doing?
Good, Dave.
Good.
How are you?
How are you?
Pretty good. Can't complain. Just one question. When I'm talking to a broker and he finds a property that's being listed by another broker, and if I decide to do the deal because it's a good deal, is there a template for a percentage that I should give him for referral, or is that just up to what we're able to negotiate?
Well, the right answer on that one is the seller usually pays the listing broker. Sometimes the listing broker will share the commission with the selling broker. If not, and you really like the deal, you can put the amount of commission into other closing costs so that you can pay that broker at the closing table.
Okay. So is there a certain percentage that I should focus on for that referring broker?
I'd probably say 2%, but it's depending on what the seller is willing to pay the broker who listed it.
Okay.
So
would that be?
Have you signed any type of an agreement with this broker to find new properties?
No, I haven't. We've just been talking, and he just happened to forward a few properties to me, and one of them I did some underwriting on, and it doesn't quite meet the trilogy at the number that they're asking for, but if I bring the number down properly, it does, and this broker's asking, does he get some kind of referral fee, and I'm not sure where we plug that referral fee in. Is that in during the underwriting phase?
I see. Okay. All right. What size deal are you looking for?
The property itself, the ask price is $2.4 million, but when we did the underwriting, it's more like a $1.9 million deal.
So how many units is that? Like, how many units are you looking at?
Student property is 11 units.
11 units? Okay.
Yeah.
Most of the time, right? These properties are going to get traded with the listing broker. The listing broker is going to most likely won't want to split that commission because typically it's around 3%. So what you'll have to do is, like Jeannie was saying, you'll have to underwrite for paying this guy maybe like 1 or 2% for bringing you to the deal. But what he's going to give you, right? He's going to give you like a buyer broker agreement when you decide like on a property. I'm surprised he didn't give it to you before. So you really need to look at that because, typically one of those buyer broker's contracts will say that he's going to represent you for the next 6 months within a 150-mile radius of that property, and any property that you close, you're going to pay him that 2%. So you're going to have to make that agreement property-specific. Yeah, so if he gives you any type of an agreement like that, just shoot it over to us at the office.
Yeah.
We'll take a look at it before you want to sign it.
You definitely
but
want to watch
underwrite.
That.
Yeah, I'd underwrite at 2% commission, giving him 2%, paying that out. But that'll be that'll go into your underwriting. So, just do it at 2%.
All right, that's good info. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, don't sign any broker, buyer broker agreements unless we look at them with you because they're very tricky in their wording. It could say no matter what you buy in what area for the next 6 months, they're getting paid.
Okay, we have one more from Doug. Doug, please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks again. Jeff and Jeannie, you hit on what I wanted to comment on. The selling broker is going to hit you with an agreement, and you need to be really careful that you haven't signed an exclusive. And Jeff and Jeannie, you touched on it. So be careful. The selling broker is going to want to get you into an exclusive.
Exactly.
So that was it. That's all. Thank you.
All
Okay, and that is
so important. Yeah, thanks for calling in, Ray, because I've seen people that have signed that, and they're out of that market for like 6 months, or else they have to underwrite every deal, paying this guy the 2%. So, yeah, be very careful, and like we said, send it to us. We'll take a look at it.
Yep.
Okay, Jeannie, that's going to wrap it up, the Let's Grill Jeannie. So next week we're going to do a Let's Grill Jermaine, right, Jermaine?
Absolutely.
No, it's going to be a Tuesday with Dave call next week.
Yep.
So that'll be good.
And we'll go back to the 1 o'clock time frame. We thought we'd try this 4 o'clock because we thought other people out in the West Coast would be able to get on the call at a later time during the day. We're going to check the numbers, see how that worked, and if it worked well, then we'll do these Tuesdays with Jeannie at 4. If it did not, we'll go back to the 1 o'clock Tuesdays with Jeannie.
Or we'll just switch it, because maybe it affected the East Coast too. So we're just like, we're going to do some research on the data for us, and we might go 1 and 4 every other Let's Grill Jeannie, whatever. But we always try to improve the coaching program. But thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, guys.
All right.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Bye.